you can't visit this world that's so peaceful, so colorful, so amazing, and then in a matter of however many hours, you're back into reality. For people who have been trapped in a world called prison, it's a whole world within itself. So when you caught into that world and you're stuck there, and then you could come home and be introduced to this beautiful world where everything is rainbows and, you know, you want to be there. So you're going to do whatever it takes to continue to be there because you're not on drugs. It's a hallucinogen. It just helps me focus a little bit more and it helps me see things different. So it's not a drug. I just do it with my coffee every day until you're doing it 2 or 3 times a day so that you don't have to ever be back in this world and you could get lost in that world. And that's what happened to our brother. He didn't get on a drug that had him in a dark place. He was on something that he felt opened his horizon and opened his mind to a brighter world, a world that everyone
this
isn't able to live in.
This is KBOO Portland.
What would KBOO be without its more than 300 volunteers? They support the station with everything, and now they need someone to support them. KBOO is looking for a community organizer who would bolster and empower our volunteers. Are you the right person, or do you know someone who is? Then go to kboo.fm to learn more about the essential functions of the volunteer coordinator and the qualifications we're looking for. To apply, please email your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org by Sunday, March 6 at midnight. You can also apply by mailing your resume and cover letter to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Remember, KBOO is a volunteer-powered radio.
Times Like Now is an interview program. Interviews with interesting people that are doing cool stuff. My name is Trevor Collins, and on today's episode, I'm speaking with friends of Celilo Falls, Sean Cruz and Arlen Stwyer from Friends of Celilo Falls, on this episode of Times Like Now. Hello, Arlen and Sean. Thank you so much for joining me on the program today.
Nich Pachwai.
And Arlen, your involvement with Celilo Falls, tell me a little bit about your personal history with Celilo Falls.
Waikanishpam, Celilo Wayampam, we are the Salmon people, the oldest inhabited village in the northern continent. In the 1950s, the federal government constructed several dams on the Mid-Columbia, abrogating its Treaty of 1855 obligations and ignored the sovereign status of the Celilo Wayampum, the Umatilla, the Yakima, my tribe, the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs, and the Nez Perce. We call the river Inchawana. That means big river. We don't agree with the name Columbia River. We call it Inchawama. And our oral history involves longhouse songs. It includes accounts of the great floods that inundated the Inchawana 12,000 years ago. If you can picture 16 million adult salmon returning through the jaws of the Columbia River. My father is a treaty fisherman, and believe me, today's salmon runs are a mere shadow of what they once were. It was a great wonder of the world. I have learned about how our people traded along the river. I have learned about how my people fished, and there were sites and names of each area the families were fishing at. Today, we still carry those names. Our ancestors, along called Shushkushpa, it's along the city of the Dalles. Here, they traded fresh salmon, dried salmon, camas roots, huckleberries, baskets, clothing, shuptakai, a rawhide suitcase, beadwork, and other fine crafts. I learned that our people are very wealthy in that day in time and resources, and the women worked alongside the men. This is what I learned growing up as a child. Thank you.
Now, Sean, your involvement with Celilo Falls, you are the, I know you are the executive director of the Jim Pepper organization. Tell me a little bit about how you got involved with Celilo and with Arlen regarding the Friends of Celilo.
I'd love to. There's a train going by. Can you hear it?
I can hear you just
fine.
Okay,
good. Okay. In 2007, I was serving as Oregon State Senator Abel Gordley's legislative staff. And that year was the 50-year anniversary of the day they flooded the Celilo Falls. And delegations from the Columbia River Treaty tribes and Celilo Village came to the Capitol to meet with Senator Gordley and ask her to sponsor the two Celilo bills. Senate resolution mourning the flooding of the falls and the loss to the Wyom people, and then a resolution to Congress urging Congress to at last, 50 years after they made promises to replace the housing that they bulldozed with no intention to actually build those houses, 50 years later to actually provide the funding to have those houses built. And that was in 2007. And I was in those meetings when the tribal members talked about the losses that they suffered. And they told us the history of the falls and the people and the salmon. And they said that the falls were not flooded for hydropower. It's the dam at the Dalles flooded the falls, but it's not the hydropower that keeps the falls flooded. It's for they flooded them for two other reasons. One is for barging, navigation to get past the falls, past the rapids, and the other was an attempt to force the Indians to abandon Celilo Village and the other housing that was on both sides of the river that was tribal. Mm-hmm. And they weren't successful in forcing the Indians to abandon the village, and that makes Celilo the oldest continuously inhabited settlement in North America. It goes back some 12,000 years, carbon dated at that site. There's no other place like it in North America.
Exactly. In fact, Lewis and Clark expedition wrote about traveling through that area and being able to hear Celilo Falls from miles away. In fact, Celilo is was larger falls than Niagara. Is that right?
By volume. Niagara has an average annual flow of 85,000 cubic feet a second, and Celilo was 190,000 cubic feet a second.
Right. So on March 10th, 1957, the Army Corps of Engineers turned off the water and got rid of the Celilo Falls, flooded those falls, and they've been underwater ever since now for 65 years. And your organizations, the two organizations, that's yourself and Friends of Celilo Falls, having a little bit of a commemorative reunion to mark the day. That's coming up very soon. Tell me when and where. Arlen, you can tell me that.
Yes, March 10th, 2022, at the Blue Lake Park over in... what's the name of that town, Sean?
Fairview,
Oregon, which is close to Portland. And we see this as 65 years of silence of the river. And so we will commemorate that with a celebration of gathering of the river people to have both... Our ancient culture also our veterans, our tribal leaders, other dignitaries that choose to be with us, salmon bake, moose and deer stew, and horse parade. It's going to be a wonderful remembrance of our Celilo Falls.
And that is March 10th. That's Thursday, March 10th. And
correct.
That will start in...
It'll start at 9 in the morning is when the horse parade will start. The veterans will post the colors. The veterans will also close the ceremony at the end of the day at approximately 4:30 p.m. And so we are looking forward to being together all the way to northern Washington, the Colville tribes, to Idaho, the Nez Perce, to eastern Oregon, the Umatilla, to Yakima, Washington, and Warm Springs, Celilo people too.
Arlen, how did you get involved with Celilo Falls, with the Friends of Celilo Falls? How did this organization get to become a thing?
Sean was very active with the music industry, with Jim Pepper Foundation that he was developing, and he was doing festivals. And I attended as an artist, as a beadwork, master beadwork artist, and as a dancer, and I enjoyed it. And he always wanted me to be on the board of directors, and I said, well, Sean, I'm an artist, and I know how to raise money for arts, but festivals is a different animal, and if you would change your direction with your foundation, then I will join you. And so a few years ago, he did change the direction, although I have been involved since day one as an artist, but not on the board of directors until maybe 4 years ago. I serve as vice chairwoman and work with the board of directors, which we're doing some fabulous projects around music and culture and history.
Okay, Arlen, could you tell me a little bit, in your words, what you would like to see this organization become and what you would like to see become of the Falls? What are some of the forecasts or wishes that your organization would like to see happen at Celilo Falls and in that area?
We are going to have that conversation with each of the nations that I had described earlier, and we would have to work together. And I believe the timing is right with the Biden administration and those tribal leaders that he has appointed to top levels at the Department of the Interior with Deb Haaland, at the National Parks with Charles Chuck Sams, and at the Army Corps of Engineers, ironically, Jamie Pinkham, a Nez Perce tribal member. And so we see some possibilities of more education and doing some of the frontline work on letting people know from young to old about the possibilities that we could have on our mighty Celilo Falls. And so right now at Celilo, it's a tiny village, and what's roaring down there is the railroad tracks, not the falls. And so we want to bring back our salmon culture, that we have oral histories that tell us about how the salmon are there to take care of us for the rest of our life. Well, as the salmon are dwindling, it makes us feel like we are dwindling also. And the sign of the times today has been a voracious factor with the COVID pandemic and with the loss of our elders, loss of our language. And so it all is holistic to us, from our food to our health, to our mind, to our spirituality, to our culture. It's something that ingrained in our teaching about our way of life. on why it's important that we have to take care of the habitat and restore the health of our salmon. And I know the different reservations have specialized circumstances. The Yakimas are dealing with radiation factors from Hanford, for example. That's a continuous problem. And in where I live, it's the fact that the salmon population are dwindling, and so there's less food, and that's what we it's our sacred source to our people.
Is there any possibilities, because I know that entire area is historic to the tribes, not just the falls, but all up and down the river on both sides. Is there any chances of that Celilo Lake, the water that is behind the dam there, so that this falls could be returned one day? Is there a chance of this? I guess it was a political and a legislative issue, but is there any chances of something like that ever happening again, and maybe seeing those dynamic falls once more?
There's absolutely a chance of that happening. But there's only one way that it can possibly happen and have the support of the river tribes and the Wayampa, and that's if they're in charge of it. They have to have the last say. And the whole region there, the archaeological site, that all has to be protected. And the village reunited with the riverbank again. And that means that would mean a double track of rail and I-84, and then another rail line that separate the village from the falls now, that would have to be removed. Relocated. So it's a big multi-billion-dollar project in order to do that. But fundamentally, the way that the Columbia River is being used today is very detrimental to the fish, not only for the dams as obstacles, but the water moves too slowly and it gets too warm. And that is with global warming, climate change, that is ever more of a problem. If the water gets to a certain temperature, the salmon will die. And the reason that the water flows at the rate it does is really for barging and no other reason. And there's just going to have to be change where water is allowed to flow and barging and Celilo Falls cannot coexist.
There's very little barging going on that portion of the river, isn't that true?
Yeah.
Not very much.
There's an average of 3 barge tows a day on the whole river, upriver from the Bonneville Dam. And that's all the way up into Idaho. There's only an average of 3 barge tows a day that travel through the locks. And that includes, and that's both directions, and includes empties. And 80% of the barges going upriver are empty. And when there's discussion about barging and the economics of barging, they always want to talk about the value of products grown on those giant corporate farms that's exported. Comes down the river, they want to talk about those billions of dollars, but they never want to talk about what goes upriver, which is also a cost to the public. 80% of the barges going upriver are empty. And what's in the other 20%? Garbage going to Arlington landfill, gasoline, fertilizer for those giant farms, and nuclear waste going to Hanford. That's what's going upriver.
It was about 8 years ago that public funds cost $50 million to restore the locks for the barges.
That's right. We paid for that. The public. We paid for that. $50 million. And they have a lifespan of, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years. They have to keep replacing them.
Is your organization working or speaking with any of the state legislation to at least look at this sort of project?
Well, we have the Friends of Celilo Falls on Facebook, but the organization is, we've mainly just been focusing on keeping the story alive on our Facebook and waiting for the right time to organize and to educate the public and policymakers. And during the Trump administration, there was just no good time to talk about it. It was better not to talk about it. But now with Biden in office, and as Arlen mentioned earlier, Deb Haaland is Secretary of the Interior, Chuck Sams, National Parks Director, Jamie Pinkham, and the Corps of Engineers, and other Native people, and non-Native people with a heart for Celilo, are in high places now. And Joe Biden wants to build infrastructure, and we have a multi-billion-dollar project right here for the east end of the Columbia Gorge, and we're hoping they're going to look at that.
It certainly would change the face of the area if that sort of thing were to happen. If the barges were to find another way to move goods up that river or up the area, maybe in planes or whatnot, other ways to allow the river to return to what it once was.
Yeah.
Now again, your event happening on March 10th, that's Thursday, at Blue Lake Park.
Yes.
Who are some of the, will there be speakers as well as entertainment?
Yes. And there's no admission charge. There is it's a metro park, and they have a $5 parking fee. We don't know if that's going to be waived, but there's no admission charge for our event.
March 10th is exactly the 65th anniversary. It happens on a Thursday, and we will start our events at 9 a.m. with a traditional horse parade with a color guard of all the veterans. And believe me, they were so excited about Chuck Sams, and unfortunately something about the travel was denied by the administration, and so we were unable to get Chuck. Chuck just so happens to be a retired Navy Special Intelligence officer, and the veterans are numerous. There's over 100 on the Yakima Reservation, and they were looking forward to coming and standing up in support when he spoke as the key person that we had lined up at the time. And so we just have to flow along with whatever politics comes up, and we're getting a tremendous response, over 175 hits on some comments I made on Facebook, and that made our event move from one park to another park to the third park to accommodate all the traffic. Yes, it's been 65 years that we have not had any kind of events to get together as the river tribes. And at this moment, we'll have the audience of the City of Portland, the Metro Council, are our major sponsors. And under their guidance and their sponsorship of a partial funding and the river tribes, we decided that Blue Lake Park was probably going to best serve the needs of the elders, of the handicapped, of the horse trailers for the horse parade we're going to have, possibly canoe trailers. We're not sure yet. With this COVID, it's been a major impact on our cultural activities and continuation of events. For example, we haven't used our canoes in 2 years. And if we're not using our canoes, we're not keeping up with basic insurance and such. And so these things happened upon us, and we just were very pleased to get the support from the city of Portland and the Metro. And we're intentionally going to have all of the speakers show up in the afternoon after the non-native leaders arrive from their meetings to listen to those historical and also the more technological impacts of our people with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. The director, Asia Dakota, is the first time we had a female executive director, and she's graduated from, I believe, Cornell University. She's Yakima. And so I asked her if she would make her speech more in line with the technology of today, and the other speakers will be more of a historical balance and what have you.
Wonderful. Very excited for you and for your organization for this. I wish I was able to make it to the event on that day. Sean, I wanted to talk a little bit just in the last couple minutes that we have here about your organization, the Jim Pepper Native Arts Council. You are the executive director of this. Tell me, what does this organization do? And tell me a little bit about Jim Pepper. Who was he?
Jim Pepper was a member of the Kaw and Muscogee Creek Nations. He was born in Salem, Oregon. And he passed from lymphoma 30 years ago this year. So we're remembering Jim, who walked on 30 years ago this year, and it's our 10th year of celebrating his legacy. And
tell me, he was a musician, correct?
Oh, yeah. Tenor saxophone, mainly. Tenor and soprano saxophones. And is the only Oregon musician whose instrument is in a glass case in the Smithsonian Museum, and that's the National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. And yet he's far better known away from Oregon than he is in his own home state and his own hometown. But our mission is we're actually an educational organization. Our mission isn't to produce festivals. Our mission is to improve access to culturally relevant music education for Native American students in Jim Pepper's name, and reflecting the educational legacy of his mother, Floy Pepper, who is credited with being the principal writer of the state's Native American curriculum for middle and high school, and other remarkable achievements. And we've hired a team of five educators headquartered in Southern Oregon University to actually develop the actual curriculum, and we'll be rolling some of that out in the fall.
Excellent. Really looking forward to, I'm going to do some research on that, and I'm going to play some of the Jim Pepper's music that you recommended as we fade out here. And once again, Friends of Celilo Falls can be found on Facebook. I'm sure more things will be happening as we move forward in this current legislation. And best of luck to you, to your organizations, and to the return, the eventual one day return of Celilo Falls. I would personally very much like to see that.
A lot of the people that will be speaking are going to be having lifetime experiences. And our keynote speaker is Elizabeth Woody. She was the Oregon Poet Laureate a couple years ago, and she's written 7 books, including several statements on Celilo. And so we are going to be including all of the river tribes to be inclusive on the event. It'll be both traditional and contemporary, and only one portion in the beginning will not be allowed for any photography or recording for maybe 1 hour. Other than that, it will be wide open to the public.
Thank you very much, Sean, and Sean Cruz and Arlen Stwyer. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And back at you.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Past episodes of Times Like Now can be heard wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Trevor Collins, and I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. Original music provided by Jim Pepper. Thank you again for listening. I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sarah Kate Nomura. She's the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at the Portland Japanese Garden, and she's here talking about fashion and fantasy, the art of Netsuke carvings. Thanks very much for coming on Art Focus, Sarah Kate.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to chat with you.
This exhibition is lots and lots, 70 in fact, tiny little carved objects. You know, Japanese are really into miniaturization, and they totally nail